This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
You guys ready?
Yeah.
Yep.
Guys, welcome to the Full Blast Podcast. I'm Jeff Fader. We are here with my friends, Matt Stagmer and Steve House, and we're going to talk about all the things that they've been up to. These guys have been up to stuff. You know what I'm saying? But before we get into that, let's talk about a little bit of business. Number one is Broadbeck Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder for knife makers and sculptors and metalworkers and sculpt and whatever. You're removing material. This is the machine for you. Go to broadbeckironworks.com. Put in the promo code KNIFETALK10 for 10% off of the grinders, attachments, parts. They got new attachments now that are really great. They're adjustable. Work rest is dynamite. And I hear good things about the
Rotary platen.
So go check out what's going on over there and use that Knife Talk 10 for 10% off all your stuff. Next are my friends at Evenheat-Kiln.com. They are the sponsors of this podcast and the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. Go find your next oven at Evenheat-Kiln.com. Get involved with that tap control. Get involved with that solid state drive. If you're making anything that needs to be hard, they're the ones for you. Never forget Evenheat. It's hard on the outside and warm in the middle, just the way you like it. Guys, listen, I want you to get yourself involved with Evenheat. See all the different things that they have. Go to evenheat-kiln.com. Get yourself, if you're in metalwork, if you're a ceramicist, if you're a glassblower, this is the stuff for you. Evenheat-kiln.com. Next are my friends at, in Canada, if you're in Canada or United States, go to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com or MaritimeKnifeSupply.ca for all your knife making needs, belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forges, presses, heat treating ovens, anvils, ovens, all the, if you need some damage steel, they got it. If you need some, the Broadbeck, if you're up in Canada, they're the distributors of Broadbeck. If you need anything, Lawrence Lake is also a knife maker, so he knows what you need. He's got, he knows these little tiny things that anytime I'm on Knife Talk, I mention something, he got it. So go to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com, MaritimeKnifeSupply.ca. If you're in Canada, what you're playing, obviously, you can't get it all in whatever Canadian Home Depot is. And if you're in the United States, they're just as fast as everybody else. If you get a 10-pack of abrasive belts, you get 10% off. So check out everything at MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. I want to thank my friends at Trojan Horse Forge, makers of the Stable Rail Knife Finishing Vise. Sam and Jeff are hard at work making vices built in the heart of Texas. The vices are meant to take your handle finishing to a whole new level with features you won't find anywhere else. They have a quick connect stable rail sanding attachment that allows you to maximize the use of this vise. You can hand sand the knives and you're supported. There's rubber all over the place, and they are great. They're in a bomb-proof case, and if you're not playing around with them, you're making a big mistake. And if you go to TrojanHorseForge.com, put in the promo code FULLBLAST10, you're going to get 10% off everything, including the T4 Sentinel Oil, their new handle press attachment, and everything else. Definitely get involved with them. When they make in batches. It's an American-made company. And when they're out. And they're constantly making more and selling more and making more and selling more. I really appreciate these guys. So definitely get a hold of them. Next are my friends at BakerForge.com. That's Baker Forge and Tool on Instagram. Boy, I had such a good time with Coy. Coy Baker really is a great, if you're a maker and you want to be inspired, go listen to the Baker Forge episode, the Coy Baker episode. He's really great, and he's making really, really, really great steels. The steels that he uses, all the copper mascus and the copper mize and the bronze mize and the copper mascus and all this bullshit. I mean, all this great exotic steel. Don't worry about that, Matt. I know what I'm doing. This stuff is the best, and the best part about it is it's very, 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 very repeatable. So all the steel, I've been using their steel for a while. There's no inclusions. There's no weirdness. There's the cores in the middle. Everything's easy to use. It comes ready to cut on your bandsaw. It's ready to heat treat. Super duper easy to use. If you're a stock removal guy, there's no reason why you wouldn't use Baker Forge stuff. And if you can heat treat to 80 CRV2, which is nothing to write home about, you can do this. So definitely go over to BakerForge.com, put in the promo code FULLBLAST, get you 10% off, including Gator Piss. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Gator Piss. Gator is short for alligator. Piss is short for urine. This is the best etching on the market. And no one talks about etching like they do gator piss. And I don't know how they do it, but they do it. I've used it for Damasteel. I've used it for the Baker Forge stuff. I've used it for Damasteel, Damascus. Stuff is awesome. And if you go to, if you're in Europe, you can go to DIYEurope.eu. And boy, got some gator piss. And the funny thing is if you're not in the United States, nobody knows where an alligator is. So don't worry about that. Just tell some of that. I mean, seriously, the crazy part is there ain't no alligators in Europe, right, Steve?
No, but we have, like, education and stuff. We've got
and
the BBC.
Piss.
Oh, really?
And lots of piss. But you never seen an alligator.
Taking
you got
a piss.
You got piss all over the place. So definitely go get yourself some of that. I forgot that you do have education. I apologize to some of the European listeners, but, you know, you never heard of, you never seen one. They don't have alligators in the zoos in the EU or in the UK, so don't worry about that. All right, guys, go get yourself some of that copper, my bronze, my sand, my copper Damascus, copper Damascus, mosaic Damascus. Get yourself some of that gator piss. BakerForge.com, full blast, get you 10% off. Last but not least, but I want to thank my friends at Total Boat. That's totalboat.com/full blast. That's an immediate direct link to give me some street cred. Get yourself some of that two-part epoxy, the UV Cure clear resin. I'm a knife maker and I use their two-part epoxy and I love it. So if you're like me, or if you're like Keith Decent, Derek from Malden, Keith Johnson, Jimmy Duresta, Keith Mitchell, all them Keiths, go get yourself some of that Total Boat. Stop playing. My friends at GL Hansen and Sons are making this amazing Gicarta. Gicarta is a unique composite of natural fibers, fabrics mixed with epoxy under pressure. Stuff is dynamite, and it's perfect for handle scale. So basically, it's like a loaf of colorful canvas micarta with different types of epoxy, and then they cut it on the bias, so you end up getting this something that looks like kind of a brain corally thing. Get yourself some of that Bofa ripple cut tuxini, mahi mahi radio worm Gicarta pheasant colorama hoopla. You could even say, why is he saying these names? You need to go to g.l_Hansen and Sons on Instagram and you can see what I'm talking about. But definitely get yourself some of that stuff. Go to gcarta.bigcartel.com. I'm with you 100%. I love these guys, and I love their material. And last but certainly not least, I want to thank my friends at Tormek, celebrating 50 years in business with the Black T8 sharpening system, the water-cooled sharpening system. It is dynamite. It has made me a better knife maker because I've been able to figure out ways in which to sharpen my knives and make my knives better so I'm getting a repeatable edge, a very good edge. I'm very happy with them, and I'm not undercutting the edge. I'm not overdoing it. I'm not overheating the knives. I'm getting a very, very repeatable edge. So go to Tormek.com, see what they're up to, or go to Tormek_sharpening on IG. And the last but not least, one thing, you guys got to help me out. I got Pat Quinn from the Center for Metal Arts coming soon. And we're going to be doing a blacksmith question and answer situation. And this is your opportunity to ask questions for about blacksmithing, whatever you want. Anything about blacksmithing, forging, Center for Metal Arts. And I'm going to have him in here. We're getting some questions together, and we're going to do a kind of like, blacksmith talk with a guy who's about as respectable as it comes. Pat Quinn is one of the best, and he will answer your questions. So go to Full Blast Podcast on Instagram and then DM me your questions. It'll be really helpful. And then, you'll get to interact with Pat Quinn, which is good enough for me. You know what's really good enough for me? My two friends are here, Matt Stagmer and Steve House. Matt Stagmer, wait. You know who Matt Stagmer is. He's made that works. He's that works. He's a YouTube star. He's an awesome guy. Oh, and my friend Steve House, Moonshine Metalwork. I'm supposed to give you an ass whipping, but I don't think I will. Guys, how are you?
I'm really good.
I'm doing great myself. Man, I was waiting for at least one more of those last but not least.
Yeah, well, you gotta. I mean, here's the funny thing. I love doing ad reads, and the more I do them, the faster, the better I get.
You did. You broke your record. Last time was 11 minutes.
God bless Nordic Edge. They're not with me anymore. So that's one of the reasons why. God bless Nordic Edge. Hope sending the best vibes to you guys. Everything worked out fine. They were a super great sponsor. And I have nothing but highest regards for those guys over at nordicedge.com.au. Definitely give them a follow. That was the last but not least. Guys, Steve, you're back in the UK.
I am, yes.
It was great seeing you at Maker Camp.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it was very wet at Maker Camp, but it was really good getting to see everyone. If I can find an excuse to get over there every year for that, I will. It's such a good event.
Yeah, it's almost in one way, it's a shame that it rained as far as the event goes, but I feel like it gave a lot of the people who are usually working all day, well, you guys in the blacksmith tent just kept working, but most everybody else kind of like gathered underneath the pavilion or something. So it gave me time to get to know a lot more people this year. Yeah. So that was kind of cool for us, but not necessarily for the event as a whole. But either way, we all came out a little better, I think, from that event every year.
The overall, definitely. When I talked to people about this past year, and that we got deluged, and the way what happened was the water just drained into the blacksmithing tent. I mean, it drained everywhere, but I mean, it was like they were not prepared for this kind of water. I mean, it was insane.
How can you?
The best thing about the whole thing was everyone was in such good spirits.
Yeah.
Like nobody was a prick. I was talking to Austin. He was like, everyone was super cool and is the only one of the reasons why he wants to keep doing it. Everyone had such a good attitude, which was kind of frankly bizarre. I mean, no one was bitching and hot. I mean, I'm sure there were some people bitching and moaning, but I mean, it was about as good an event as possible. And the funny part was, well, funny, but it was what the great part was we couldn't really get anything done. And then Steve and all your guys decided, hey, do you think we could forge and do some demos in the water?
Yeah.
And you guys were amazing.
Thanks, man. But like, cause I was going to say, it's the first time, Joe and Jimmy have been able to come over for one of these events.
Right.
And I've been hyping it up for so many years and saying how good it is and that you should really come along. And I think they both kind of, wanted to go along and wanted to get involved because I think if anything, they were a little overwhelmed because there's just so many people to meet and so many people to talk to and all of that. So I think it was kind of, as much as I think it was just like a safety net for them to be able to get behind an anvil, actually just start doing some forging. It just felt
right. And they're no strangers to rain. They were probably just right at home with that. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you guys were like, I mean, it didn't seem to be that. I mean, the hardest part was there was like, you know, 2.5 inches of water under the anvils. I mean, I still have a mud line around my anvil stand from where the mud was just kind of running through. It was bananas. Yeah. But you guys were like, no, yeah, no problem. And Austin would bring bales of hay and throw hay down to kind of sop it up. And everyone had a great attitude. You were always very smiley with your... I'm not beating your brakes in, Steve.
I know.
Jesse thought I was going to beat your brakes in, and I didn't beat your brakes in. Yeah, you had a great attitude, and I think it really helped.
Yeah. I mean, with an event like that, like you say, you can go one of two ways. You can get upset and you can complain about it, but no one can do anything. It's the situation you're in. So, and I think especially with the maker community as well, everyone's just trying to find a way of fixing the problem somehow, which, to be fair, I think was mostly just all of us kind of scraping out escape channels for the water. So we had these rivers running through the blacksmithing tent rather than it just being one big lake.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what the funniest part is, and maybe I'm being cynical and that's just the way it is, but I think it had to do with the location. I mean, where Maker Camp is, there's nothing around. I mean, there is legit, they call it the Irish Alps. I mean, ain't nothing over there. I mean, you can't, it's not like if it was in the Queens or Brooklyn. If it was in Brooklyn, people would have just fucking left. And it wouldn't have been, all right, guys, well, I think I'm rained out. I think I'm going to go home. I mean, but because you're in the middle of nowhere, there wasn't a whole lot.
Where else are you going to go?
Yeah, where the fuck are you going to go? So maybe I shouldn't be so kind about everyone's attitude. Maybe it was just a question of like, well, we have nowhere to go. So, you know. So when you left, I guess you went straight down to a work with Matt and Chris down in Maryland, yeah?
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
It's the other way around.
Okay.
He was here first doing all the stuff with us, and then Maker's Camp happened.
Okay.
And then he was here for a while longer for some other craziness.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I originally was supposed to go back home directly after Maker Camp, as in like, I think originally I had the flight
the day after
Tuesday. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then some stuff kind of happened and Matt was like, do you want to stay for an extra week so that we can do some blacksmithing in New York City? And there's no way that I'm going to say no to being able to do something like that. So, yeah, that craziness then happened.
Tell us about the craziness.
All right. So I'm going to try to keep it brief because we don't have that much time. It is a hell of a long story this all happened. So every year Steve comes over in the fall right before Maker Camp usually and like does stuff with Chris mostly. Him and I do some things here and there, but spend some time over here and then he usually comes back, you know, later in the year or whatever.
Yeah.
So that was already kind of on the table and this was a Saturday morning, if I remember correctly. I'm just sitting at my computer doing some editing and I hear my wife in the bedroom say, "Hey, honey." I was like, "Oh, what's up?" They're like, "Did you know Conor McGregor has a beer?" And I was like, "No, but she likes his whiskey, Proper 12.
So Conor McGregor, if anyone doesn't know, Conor McGregor is an MMA. He's a UFC fighter, champion, multi. I mean, he's elevated the sport to something that's much more popular than ever has been.
So she likes his whiskey. So I was like, "Oh, let me check out this beer." So I like go on Instagram. She sends me the link before I could even get my phone. And she said, "And the logo for the beer is a sword." And I was like, "Oh, no shit. Okay. I'm just going to reach out to whoever's running the Instagram and say, hey, you know, I do this, that, and the other." So I reached out to him. I said, "Hey, you know, I run a YouTube channel. I'm a blacksmith. We make stuff mostly from games and movies and stuff. But like your logo is a pretty prominent looking sword. And I think it would be really fun." Because they were just launching that their social media presence. The beer wasn't even like, it was only available at the place they make it at the time in Ireland. So they were just starting their socials. And I was like, "Hey, why don't we," I figured maybe they had a, you know, like a little bit of advertising budget. So I just threw it out there like, "Hey, we'd love to make a sword." Literally, like, I don't know. It wasn't a day later. It was within the day. They got back to me and said, "Hey, man, that sounds awesome. Like, you know, what's the price breakdown? Here's my email. Let's, you know, scoot this conversation over there." So I gave them the whole price breakdown and they talked me down a little bit, but like they were super gung-ho to do it. And it was like, within 2 days of just talking back and forth, it was on and they wanted it like now. And we weren't really going to get into this, but like at that time, after Blade Show, Ilya got his own shop and moved out of the shop. You're hearing that here first. I haven't really said that much publicly. So it was just me. Chris doesn't like making swords, doesn't like making knives. So I'm kind of like, all right, well, if I'm going to do this big budget sword thing, it's kind of a big deal. And back in my head the whole time, like, YouTube's a weird place. In my head, I was thinking this is going to be a big deal. It's going to get seen by a lot of people. So in my head, I wanted to make a big deal out of it, of the filming, make it better, like take my time, make sure everything's lit well, shoot it nicely. Don't just do it on a tripod. So the first thing I thought of was like, oh shit. So Steve's supposed to come over here. I know Steve has filmed a bunch of stuff for YouTube.
Well, amazing. Amazingly
right.
Well.
Right. Right. Thanks, well, you know, like, in my head, he's like another guy like me. Like, he can make everything and he can be behind the cameras. Most of the time when you watch even almost all of our YouTube videos, when I do the grinding portion of the blades, I'm filming that myself on tripod. Like, no one really in the shop really enjoys shooting other than me. So I was just thinking, you know, who can I get to actually film me as I film them? And like,
yeah.
And immediately I was like, I thought about Steve and I asked Chris, I was like, "Hey, Chris, like, when's Steve supposed to come over?" And he said, you know, I think at the time it was like, he was supposed to come over like the first week of October or something like that. And this was like early September. And he was like, "But he'll come over early if you pay for him to come over." And I was like, "You sure?" He was like, "Just hit him up." And I asked Steve and Steve's like, "Well, I got some stuff to do." I was like, "Well, here's the deal. I got this gig with Conor McGregor." I just laid it out to Steve. And Steve's like, "Okay, give me a minute. See if I can like switch around some of my things I have scheduled." And I mean, Steve, you feel free to jump in and tell your side at any time. I'm just trying to keep it as quick as possible because the good stuff comes later, but go ahead.
Yeah. As I say, I think like you told me on like the, I want to say it was like the Wednesday or something like that.
Yeah.
And I booked the flights on the Saturday, I think, and then was on the plane the next Thursday or something.
Wow.
Yeah. It was all very, very much kind of like, because I was working, obviously working with the guys at Thornwood Forge as well. I was also doing some shifts at a local bar, just like extra pocket money. And it was essentially just like, how can I get out of all of these obligations straight away? And luckily the guys at Thornwood, Joe and Jimmy, like they're super cool. As soon as I said to them, they were like, yeah, just do what you've got to do, dude. Like, we get that that's a really cool thing to be part of.
Yeah, it was a good opportunity.
Yeah. And when I spoke to the guys at the bar, they essentially said the same thing. As soon as I was like, I've got to go make a sword for Conor McGregor, they just went, yep, okay, go. Yep, that's fine.
Yes. I mean, who says no to something like that?
The exactly. Funny thing in the back of my head, and it'd be fun to get Steve's perspective too, is like, in the back of my head, I've been this maker of weapons, swords, whatever it is, slash, you know, filmographer or whatever you want to call it, for so long that I kind of forgot that Steve has never even made a sword.
No.
I was just thinking, oh, he swings a hammer. We've done the previous summer, we did some live demos together at Matt Harris's and the local Western Maryland Blacksmith Guild here. So like I had worked with Steve and I know that he's competent. He's a good, you know, good blacksmith. And I've obviously seen his videos. So like in my head, I didn't even think about the fact that he hasn't made a sword.
Yeah.
So his first sword is going to be one for one of the most famous or infamous people on the planet.
Yeah.
And so I didn't even think about that literally until he got to Chris's and it was like the day we started shooting. And he just kind of pointed out, he's like, this is kind of funny that this is going to be my first sword. And I was like, what? Like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
So,
Steve, were you planning on I knew originally you were going to come to work with Chris. Was Chris like planning on working with you on something different? Were you able to kind of like shuffle both these guys, or was it like a lot of ball breaking and like stepping on toes?
Yeah. There's always a lot of ball breaking with those guys. But I think originally.
Hey, I'm nice. Chris is a ball breaker.
This is true. Yeah. But yeah, I think the original plan was with Chris, like every year his kind of plan is that I will, I'll come out and, you know, it'll be quite a relaxed time.
That's not his plan. That's your plan.
Oh, no. This is what I mean. This is like every year he's like, oh yeah, no, I've not really got anything planned. And then the first year he bought an entire like metal shop, and then this year something else happened, and it's just one of those where every time I go out he seems to end up getting these huge massive deals, and he's like, yeah, we're gonna be working solidly for
the fall is
weeks.
Just no matter what shop I've been involved with, the craziness always seems to come in the fall.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. I think like the seasons are changing, people want to sell stuff, get it out, it's when it's a good time to buy a convertible and all that kind of stuff. Like,
well, just, you're finishing off the year and people need to, you know, get those tax deductions going so, before the end of the year. So
initially he was just going to come out with Chris and just kind of spend most of the time. We always had talked about doing like a build or something while he was here because there's downtime and different things. But this time it was like the first 2 weeks that he was here, he was all mine and we were working on this project. Not even two weeks, like 10 days really.
Yeah, but it was also in like, 100 degree
heat. Yeah, it just so it was so beautiful the week before Steve came. And then when he got here, it was 100 and some plus like heat, plus the forge going. And we just didn't, at the time, I had this like deadline from them that they wanted it basically done and like the video out in like 3 weeks from the time we started. So it would be like two weeks or 10 days of making and then editing, send back and forth, get it approved with them.
Wow, that's not a lot of time.
So, and we've done much, much worse rush jobs. It didn't seem that bad. It ended up not coming out for months and months, and a lot of that's due to me. But initially, we were just like, let's go. And it was so hot, we didn't wait. we were both dripping sweat. It was a hell of a time, and it was just fun. I mean,
yeah.
There's so much to the whole project that unless you're listening to this podcast or see some of the like behind the scenes video stuff that I'm going to put together, you'll just never know. There was massive high level of stress. I did a few like heats when I forged the bevels on the blade too low. So we had some like weld flaws. And
oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, that was my major stress, is there was some like weld flaw issues. And I literally had used the last bit of like steel I had in the billets for this blade. Even to the point where the initial billets that I put together, and after all the folding, I didn't think I had enough material, so we added in some like just bars of ADCRV, which I thought would be cool anyway, because when you ladder it, it would be like, you know, these like lightning streaks down the blade, which did end up happening just like that. But I was like nervous, we didn't have enough material. I'm weighing it, I'm looking at him, I'm like, dude, I don't know, you know, what should we do? And then I ended up like in the rush of it, like I said, dude, like forging the bevels a little too low heat, and we had some like weld issues, and literally my only choice at that point was to grind through it and kind of like just believe in the fact that I did things right. And and you know, we heat treated it, and it still had like some of the signs of the flaws a little bit. And I kept telling us, I have to stop grinding it here, and we have to heat treat it here, because I'm not going to get these flaws out. They look like they're going to grind out, but I hollow ground this huge sword. And I was like, if we hollow grind it anymore before heat treat, it's just going to like do the whole rippled chip edge thing. So we had to stop. And I told Steve, I was like, bro, if this grinds out, I'm literally going to grind it out like in the 600 grit. That's where the last little bit's going to grind out. Yeah. And it did. It definitely worked perfectly, and everything was flawless, and I hand sanded it, and it turned out great. But at bro, for those, I did the last little bit of grinding on a Friday, and I was like, I'll see you Monday. I ended up coming in, I think, Saturday and Sunday, just to like, I couldn't
just
sleep.
Just to be sure.
I couldn't sleep. I was like, oh my God, I was going to, but it all worked out. That's one of those things when the camera's shining, sometimes you forget and do some silly things, and that was like one of the big stress. Like, I can't even, I hope to your listeners, you can like paint the picture of like, there is no other material. Usually you have some other material that you can then like put together another billet, swap the blade out. You already got the footage. You can do it off camera. Everything will go quicker. But I didn't even have any other material to make another two-handed giant Damascus sword on hand. It would have been like, and once again, in the back of our minds, we thought we had this like mega deadline, and it just all had to work. There was no other option, and it did.
That's the trickiest part about this kind of business. Like, I know for me for the knife game in my company, I know that I have a certain amount of time. If I need to order, like, I have a knife we're working on, and there was a liner that was, we just didn't have, so I ordered it. Yeah. And I can I know that I got, all right, well, it's going to take me 3 days to get this or whatever like that. Uh-huh. But in your situation, we don't have the steel. And then it takes time to take the steel that you get and transform it into this material. It's such a huge amount of time and energy in order to get to that point. I can imagine the stress of... I can imagine the stress being just like almost crippling.
And it was, and Steve saw it, bless his heart. He was being so supportive and just like, yeah, I think it'll be fine. But I could see it in his eyes where he was like, oh shit, a little bit. And it was funny. To add to all of this, to tie in our last podcast we did together, you and me.
Oh yeah.
And this, right as that stress was happening of grinding that blade and maybe it not working or maybe it working, my channel got hacked.
Right. That's right.
So then... Yeah. You know, I was embarrassed just to come in that week and see Chris and Steve. You know, it was just like no ball breaking happened over that, at least not initially. And I was so full of anxiety now because maybe the blade's not going to work. Maybe I just signed this deal, already took like some pre-money to, you know, get Steve over and to get the materials. And then maybe I'm not even going to have a channel to put this video on. Oh, do I tell the customer? Do you not tell the customer?
No, you don't.
And it was just like, I just didn't say anything. And I just was like, oh dear God, hopefully like when this gets through, it's going to be like an amazing video. It's going to be an amazing sword. You just never know though. I didn't talk to these people all that much. They didn't really tell me what they wanted. They just said, here you go, make this sword. Here's like, I don't know if you're listening right now and you can Google the Forged Irish Stout logo. It's just like a white sticker.
yeah.
logo. There's no detail in it. There's a ton open.
Because like, you didn't even get like a high res version of it. You literally just had a screenshot of like an Instagram post to go off, and that was it.
That was it. We were supposed to get beer cans the whole time, and like they were going to get us cans to shoot the demo. We were going to have cans like in the shop and like pan past them for different stuff. And like it got the initial shipment supposedly got like taken by customs and like all this stuff. So we didn't have anything to work off, just this a little tiny 2-inch logo.
Yeah. Because with the cans, they didn't arrive until, I think, the day before I was due to...
The day you left, I think.
Yeah, they arrived the day before I actually left. So the morning that I was, like, about to leave and get on the plane, we had to do, like, the last few shots of, like, like forging with cans in the foreground and, like, the actual destruction tests and stuff like that. Yep. So I ended up going to the airport... essentially covered in this beer because we'd done the like the
you brought it with you.
Yeah, well, no, we'd done the
it
sword
just was
through
on
the
him
because
we sliced them and they just explode. So you have the beer on you.
Yeah, so like, I ended up getting to the airport stinking of this Irish stout and it was great fun.
It was super. I mean, that kind of stuff. Just I'm kind of used to like a lot of times you're gonna backtrack and like do your B-roll later and. Make it seem like it was all done at the same time as making. And it was funny. Like there's little things like that. If you look in the video, nobody's going to care about this, but like while I'm forging the blade, while I'm actually doing the bevels on the sword, Steve is filming me the day he left. Like we talked with the beer cans, like panning past them and showing me, well, I thought I had worn my apron during that whole time, but I didn't. So in those shots, I did wear my apron. So like it's off and then it's on and then it's off. Little things like that. Like you try to... You try to plan for, but I think we did a really good job with those inserts. And like right before Steve left, I got him to do some talking points to camera, which we should have done tons of times before. But it was just like the whole thing was literally like just a roller coaster ride. It was a lot of emotion, and I didn't get my channel back. Like, I mean, it's still not fully back. So like I just had anxiety the whole time, and it just all worked. It kind of shows that, you know, just like you were saying with Maker Camp, Steve, like, you know, one of the things, just a group of problem solvers, I always say, when people ask me, like, they're trying to get into it, like, hey, what's the number one skill to learn to be a good knife maker or a sword maker or whatever it is, I always say problem solve. I'm like, you learn how to problem solve and you will tackle 90% of this game. The rest is literally time. You got to have time in on it. But, you know, every project has a little something that goes wrong and you either freak out or you figure it out.
I give you a lot of credit, Matt, because you said something that really resonated with me is that when you didn't have the material, you were like, do I call a customer? And that is one of the things that drives me crazy. And it's usually small businesses who are unprepared for the eventuality of a problem. And then they're looking for some type of pity, or they're looking for some sort of, you know, they don't take responsibility for the things that they're responsible for. Like I've had situations where I have these deadlines, someone's helping me, and then I get a phone call saying, oh, well, you know, this happened. And I don't need stories. I need, you know, results. And I'm really glad that you didn't call them up and say, my YouTube channel kind of hacked. And nobody wants to hear that stuff. Nope. And I think that that's one of the tougher things in, especially as we get older, is when you start to like, you pull your big boy pants up and you're a professional, you gotta act like it. And I give you a lot of credit for, cause there is like, you want to complain or be upset or this isn't going your way, but your customer doesn't, that's always a demerit when it comes to a customer is that they don't want to fucking hear about. Yeah. I can't imagine that like the forged people would be like, what would happen would be like, you'd say, oh, well, you know, and the guy's like, I can't believe I gave this guy money.
You know, I mean, it certainly is the case, especially with these guys. I mean, we usually sign serious contracts and all that. Well, the Irish guys that we dealt with, I mean, like everything is done by honor code and handshake. And like when you mix in like kind of a pathetic, like whiny little sorry excuse making thing. It doesn't work. And a couple times I like accidentally like may have said something like that, like, hey man, we're running late on this or that. And like they don't,
but that's
they don't even answer you. They just wait.
Running
for you to
late,
be
saying
done.
I'm running late's different. It's well, I had a boss once who, when my dad was dying, we were working on a job, and I don't know, we were just, the job was running slow. And I remember finding out that the customer had come up to me. We were installing a railing, and he says, "I'm really sorry about your dad." And I'm like, "What? What are you? What is this?" And it turned out the boss was trying to use my father's illness as like an escape from why we're late.
Responsibility, yeah.
And it was so weird. And I ended up talking to him. I'm like, "Look, you can never. This is not. This is nothing to do with me or you. And I really prefer if you never really. This isn't. I'll never do it again." And that was the end of it. But I remember being like, "What kind of fucking guy makes excuses like that?" And it's just like, I find myself, especially with Knife Talk, because we have these, you know, we have these younger guys you're starting in and stuff like that, and most of it is you hear these problems and then there's this, well, things aren't going well, no customer wants to hear your problems, they want your results.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing, is at the end of the day, the customer doesn't, like, genuinely doesn't care.
They don't give a shit.
They just want the product. They want the thing at the end of it. If you've then afterwards, you can add to the story of the product and be like, oh, this happened and it makes the product itself seem more valuable, like it's got a better story to it, then, you know, maybe tell them after the fact, because they might like to talk about that and go into the story of the product. But generally, they just want the thing. Like, they're not concerned about what you've got going on. They just want to know, when am I going to get the thing? How much is it going to cost me? That's it.
So I saw pictures. Both of you were in Times Square. Tell me how you ended up in Times Square wearing UFC belts, UFC championship belts.
Okay. So I sent the final photos of the sword being completed over to my contact. I said, "Hey, the sword done." We're talking on WhatsApp, and he says, "Hey, that looks freaking amazing. What are you doing September?" I don't even remember what it was. No, it wasn't. It was October.
Like, October. Yeah.
So it was whatever it was, like the
17th
week. The week
or something?
Yeah, October 17th. And I was like, I don't know why. He's like, "Can you be in Times Square and do a live forging event? We're unveiling Forged Irish Stout for the first time in America." And I was like, can you send, I didn't know, but while he's on WhatsApp with me, he's literally on a live like board meeting trying to plan out their whole delivery schedule for their America tour of, you know, unveiling it. So while he's talking to me and going back, I was like, "Yeah, I can do it." He said, "How are you gonna do it?" I said, "Send me the venue." They send me this venue. It's like a gala kind of ballroom setup type thing. And I was like, "It's New York City. You can't have propane inside. What are we going to do?" I said, immediately, I think, okay, we can do induction forge. I don't own an induction forge. I'm like, as he's in this meeting, this is all happening live, I get on the phone with Chris Zepp from Make Everything. And I said, "Hey, dude, you got an induction forge. You're, you know, in my eyes, if you're like, all you people are within 10 minutes of Times Square.
All you people." You know? I love all you people.
I'm like, I just grouped all New York into people. This like little, you know, one mile thing, but he's, you know, he's not anywhere near it. So
he's an hour away.
Right.
He's an hour away. I'm an hour away from Times Square. He's an hour away from Times Square.
He gives me this rundown of everything. I end up touching base with Cole Ironworks, and they say, "Hey, we'll be, you know, we don't have any induction forges right now in stock, but we're going to bring one to Maker's Camp. We'll give you a deal on that one if you want to just take that one home after the event." So, okay, it all worked out. We got our induction forge. This is all happening while I'm still on WhatsApp trying to negotiate with
that's
this.
That's the best.
I negotiate with the guy a decent price, which was decent. And they paid us decent money, and they put us up on a pretty, they put us up in the Belvedere, which was kind of a fun little hotel. And I had never, I've been to Times Square, but like, it was freaking, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago almost. And I don't think Steve had really experienced it much either. And we're like, okay, we'll freaking do this. It all worked out. So we go. I rent a car because I drive a Miata. I rent a car. to put the induction forge in, the 350-pound anvil, a stump, all the materials we would need. They asked us to basically make a sword at the event. It was like,
they don't know what they're talking about. Yeah,
so
they,
it ends up
you
that
just
this
fake it and,
we know, didn't really even know what this event was until we got there. Dead straight. It basically is where all the vendors of like craft brewers and all kinds of different like breweries get together, and they have this big kind of convention, and buyers from different bars and like chains of restaurants come try out your product, and they put their annual orders in, like any old kind of like industrial convention. But it's kind of a big thing. There's live music, there's hors d'oeuvres being served. There is hundreds of thousands, if not more, of money just like it by handshake, right, being exchanged. And there's a bunch of drunk people,
right,
who
of
have been
course
drinking all night. Yeah. There's some people who are just sipping it, spitting it out, but then people can actually buy tickets to this. So there's like musicians, there's people walking around, there are tons of influencers, people that you like kind of recognize, hey, that's a guy from a band, or is that like girl of somebody, some model? You don't really know, but there's tons of like, you know, it's New York, so yeah, anybody could show up this thing. So they ask, we're doing two slots. I think, were they 2 3-hour slots or
something like that? Yeah.
2 3-hour slots of forging. And another thing is we've been working all week, and, you know, makers camp, we get there. The induction forge doesn't give you a break. You put your steel in the fire and you get like a 2 or 3 minute break while it's heating up.
Right.
Well, induction forge is just like constant. Yeah. So Steve is just going crazy. I'm going crazy. We're doing hammer and sledge, and there is no like rope tie. There is just drunk people walking, yep, by and coming way too close. We're pushing them back. And they brought, I mean, they did it huge. Like, I'm going to have a whole video on this on the That Works 2 channel. They brought like one of those punching machines.
Oh, yeah.
People could punch
it
and see it. And they had, I mean, they had a spectacle. They had Connor's UFC belts, his actual belts there, people could take pictures with. I had the sword, which we hadn't even unveiled yet, but we're letting people hold this sword, take pictures with it, which was good at all except for one experience.
Hold on one second.
Yeah.
What I'm amazed at is, and I've been involved with events, and obviously the heads, they think that it's all magic. They don't realize it's going to be loud. You got to be able to plug things in. There's going to be sparks. Who's liable? Did they ask you for like some sort of insurance or anything like that?
Bro, I tried my hardest, honest to God, you can vouch for this. I tried my hardest to talk them out of this, to the point of they didn't, you know, there's special plug that you have to have for your
I was about to ask where the fuck you plug in your induction
forge. I'm talking
forge
to the electrician. I'm talking to everyone. They told me, you know, the Irish guys are just like, hey, you know, everything's going to be all right.
It'll
be fine.
We'll figure it out.
Well, it wasn't fine. 2 a.m, they still hadn't figured it out. So they got the electrician. They cost them $900 to have, like, I don't know, 400 feet of, you know, 220 power. And whatever. It just was like this whole thing. And they were super proud to tell everybody that it cost them $900 to just get the cable. Yeah. They pointed out to everyone the cable that was running
across
the ceiling. But they loved it. Steve is a really, really good instructor and live demo. He's like, I think I'm pretty good, but he's really good. And he was
excellent.
He got all the guys from the Forged Irish Stout Company. They all forged something while they were there.
That's crazy.
They would help punch the hole for a bottle opener.
In a hotel in Manhattan.
And it's not even a hotel.
Madness.
Like, it was crazy. Right. I mean, in Times Square. Madness.
Quench buckets and fire extinguishers and shit like that?
I don't even know where the fire extinguisher was. I asked twice. No one told me where it is, but I think it was in that back room that was near us.
Oh, Mike. See, this
we had water buckets. We filled them up in the janitor closet ourselves.
Yeah.
This is like...
We didn't ask permission. You just...
I see like the tablecloths catching on fire. I see like the rug getting burned.
Yeah.
Like the thing is what, like Matt kind of skipped over the fact that like with the car, like Matt had like requested a decent sized like SUV sort of thing. And what we ended up getting was like a mid-size, like it was tiny.
Oh God.
And so we had to put all that in. I think like we'd had the induction forge fired up once before we got there, and it was literally just to make sure that it still worked. So this is the first time I've ever used an induction forge there. But we were doing all kinds of like dumb fun stuff. And
bro,
and I said to Matt, like, it's one of those, because we like back here, we quite often go to places similar to that. Like, we're doing a show in a couple of weeks at the NEC in Birmingham, and it's a big indoor like event space, and we're going to be doing that. We're actually taking propane, and we're going to be doing Forge Worlds inside. It's going to be a little bit tricky, but it was just really good. And I think after we got over the initial kind of like the nervousness around like we've got to act professional, and then when we realized actually no, we can just have fun, it was just a really, really good fun time.
It was so much fun.
I think my favorite bit was I think I made a mild steel mini blacksmith knife, and then quenched it in a pint of the Irish stout.
Oh, hilarious.
On camera, and then had to like drink from the cup to like to make it all look good. And
I
then,
have all that on camera.
But the worst thing was is I didn't realize that, or I didn't think about it. Obviously, quenching a little blacksmith knife in a pint of beer, that beer is going to get really hot. So that there's a shot of me nasty. Sipping the beer.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
And then afterwards, I'm just like, oh God, that was so hot. It's horrible.
It's nasty.
And then like scale in the bottom. And you
yep.
Like, one of the things I love about doing things like this, it's not something I'd want to do all the time.
Right.
But having just come from Maker's Camp, where we were all problem solving the whole time, we were kind of, like you said, we were nervous about the whole thing. But I was nervous about just driving there. I was like, dude, we're not going to be able to get there. Like, in the time that we allotted to set up, like, I was like, we're not going to be able to get there. We're running late. I was like, Times Square is going to be a hassle. Everything just worked out. We pulled up. We ended up, like, kind of blocking the street. Like,
yeah.
And just like unloaded. I thought we were going to get in trouble for that.
Oh, yeah.
We're wheeling in, you know, this big machinery. And then, like, we didn't have a cart or anything to put the, I mean, it's a 350-pound anvil.
And you can't go through the main entrance. We're carrying a sword. Oh, my God.
We got all our tools, our bags, buckets of water. We had to carry 6 gallons of water just to fill up the thing. So I brought the water with us. But like, you forget, like, I've done Renaissance festivals my whole life, things like Maker's Camp. Steve as well has done those things. And like, instead of just asking for help, you just do it. Like, we needed a bucket full of water. I didn't ask Joe Schmo guy in the tuxedo, who's supposed to be the event coordinator, who would take 2 hours to do it. I walked in the back room and talked to the janitor and chummed it up with him, told him we're going to be forging, thought it was the coolest thing, gave me a bucket and gave me some water. You know what I mean? Like, it's those type of things. You just get hands on, figure the problems out.
Yeah.
Everything works. It literally, we were like the hit of the entire thing. I don't even know how many vendors there were, probably 300, 200. I don't know. There was hundreds of vendors. Everyone wanted to come see what we were doing. We were making noise. We were throwing sparks. When we did the tandem striking, we took like a 1-inch bar and just heat it up. And like, we're just basically drawing a taper, and then he'd roll it up and make like a big keychain or something out of it. But like, we're doing the strike and we're just going to town on it, like sledge and striker and boom, boom, boom. Everybody wanted to see. We got so many like Instagram videos and stuff made with us doing it. It was like absolutely like insane.
And what I love is the fact that, like you say, because we're like, having gone to Maker Camp, where kind of everyone's a maker and everyone's kind of seen blacksmithing and stuff before, and then going to an event like this, like you say, people were just absolutely magic. Blown away by it. Like, even the other vendors, like, because we had a bit of a break between sessions, and I kind of had a quick wander around, and every person I spoke to was like, oh, you guys are the blacksmiths, are you ones that are making all that noise? Oh, I came over and saw you and all this. And they were like so excited, because how many people get to see blacksmithing in
and not just the blacksmithing, the actual mind of fuck that an induction melter can be. They walking up are like, how is that working? And like, Steve would like wipe his hand right past the coil, and he's like, are those coils just really hot and they heat up? And Steve would like put his hand on it or near it, and then he'd be like, what the? So we had some people that were just like computer nerds or like, you know, tech people who didn't really care about the forging, but just were like literally staring at the coils like, what am I seeing?
I'm amazed. Sorry. You were saying...
I was going to say, there was just one person that I remember that I think she nearly actually dropped her drink and did a proper double take when she saw the induction forge working. She was like, how is that? What that's magic. How does that even work?
Because it is.
Induction forge is the only way you could have done it because there was no
legally
venting. There was no...
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure it was legal, number three, just to let you know.
It was as close as we could get.
I mean, here's the interesting thing is I remember when I was at a metal shop and we would do installations in Manhattan, especially in Times Square, if we were doing a railing or whatever, and we had to bring all our tools with us. It was such a production because you can't go through the front. You got to go through the side entrance. Yeah. And then the side entrance, you got to have permission. And then you can't park your car. And it's always a fucking hassle. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing is like, and this reminds me of when John, Ariani, Cliff, Jesse, and Carrie and I did Maker Faire a number of years ago. There's the crazy part is like, you know, there's Forge and Fire and there's all this stuff, but people never really get to see the truth, you know, or what we're doing. And when they do, it really is mind bending. And it's like, that's how it should be. But We can't seem to figure out ways in which it's much more approachable in terms of people seeing it, you know. Yeah. And it's like, you know, they see Forge and Fire and they see all that bullshit and stuff like that. But then when they see you in person, they have questions because it's
is this what you actually do? Or this is all we know how to do.
I think it's. Did you end up ever meeting Conor McGregor or hearing from him?
So that story is still to be told. The closest we got is his lawyer, his personal attorney, was at that event and they were FaceTiming and they kind of had us FaceTime and say hi and like do like you know a little thing with him. But that's all still. Like, I still have the sword in possession. It's their sword. They bought it. I'm still supposed to do some more of these events, but also they do a bunch of them back in the UK and in Ireland. So even if I can't get over there, I'm hoping to at least get the sword to Steve and then at least let Steve go over and do that. Because that was all part of the handshake agreement was like, hey, we can't afford this full price of the video, but you're going to have Conor make a video with the sword and talking about the sword. We're going to do all that. So, like, all of that still has to play out. And the video is doing pretty darn well. So I'm not, like, upset about that. But one of the cool things was we made a reel teasing, Instagram reel teasing, or basically, like, a trailer for the main video. And Conor did share that. So it went from, like, 5,000 views to 1.5 million views in, like, 20 minutes. I just messaged Steve. I had, like, tagged Steve to be a collaborator on that too, and he didn't accept it, but as soon as he saw the numbers he did, I was like, I bet you did accept that collaboration. So now reel is like 2.5 million. It's just kind of, it was neat. And Conor was super cool the whole time. He was, if we posted stories and tagged him, he was he would respond to me through DMs on Instagram, like, hell yeah, brother, it looks awesome, things like that. And he was sharing the stories, resharing them, and he seems to really get the importance of, you know, if you're building a brand, you do some of the legwork yourself. And then he did. And that's been cool. And the story is still going on. And honestly, there's a part of the story Steve doesn't even really like know much about is that I did a second event in Philly after he left. And I kind of like talked Chris Cash into coming with me and he really didn't want to do it.
I bet.
So that event was not this. That event was at a actual old pub.
Yeah.
Just a bar. And we're up on stage with the DJ forging. And it was like a very VIP. It was like a lot of money for a ticket to go there. I don't remember what it was. It was like $250 or something like that. And it was like all of Philly's influencers. Like, I don't really know. I'm sorry if I don't remember them. But like, there's a guy that's like big and tattooed. And he like goes to all the like Eagles games and takes his shirt off and does like weird stuff. He was there. There was like so many people like that. And Chris is just like, yo, what the fuck did you bring me to? But we had fun. He ended up having a good time because you're chumming it up with like a lot of like pretty interesting people. And he really made it in true Chris Cash fashion. He made friends with the owner of the bar.
Yeah.
Like, and wanted to know like, hey, how'd you get into this? Like, you know, it's a family business. And they just ended up chumming and we ended up making him a bunch of stuff. And like, yeah, it was just, it was way I don't know which one was more wild, because the first one I didn't know what to expect, and like we had all the nerves. The second one was just like, no one really, how do I say? Okay, so the first one felt like a demo. We like were demoing.
Even. Right.
The second one, we were literally just like a show. Like, it was like, no one cared what we were, well, it's not true, a lot of people
came up and asked. This is exactly what happened with us, which we started helping start Maker Camp. This is from, I mean, the first time you don't know what to expect, and then you start to realize what works and what doesn't work, and then you can remember what you need to bring and then pare it down, and then what works and what doesn't work, and then the next time it's a little bit easier.
That one was cool, because like, I was forging bottle openers and just like giving them, like the bartenders were just blown away that we were there doing that. And I, like, walk up to her, the first, like, just gorgeous lady bartender. You could tell she was, like, the bartender of bartenders. And I gave her this, like, hand-forged bottle opener, and she was just blown away. So then everybody behind the bar wanted one, so we just kept doing that. And, you know, just basically tapering a bar out and making a quick, like, little bottle opener. It was no big deal, but they thought it was the coolest thing. And then, like, people that were there who had bought tickets were like, hey, you're making them stuff, man. Can I buy that from you? Can you do this? Can you make me a knife? And it was like, it was just like, hey, but it was like, it was a ton of fun. And I think we're still probably going to do a couple more. I just, one of those things, it was cool to do a couple times. I don't know how much I'd want to do of it, but still trying. I just kind of like touch base with the woman who runs those crazy events and trying to get, a gig of doing that, but literally in the middle of the octagon.
Oh, jeez,
Lord. Or a boxing event. And they think like, hey, I'll just come on out and do it. And I was like, well, we really have to plan it out. They want like forge weld, like big.
Right.
Like, well, there's still 100. So we have to really plot that out.
This reminds you.
Maybe we do it in an empty arena and make it look like I'm there. That could work. But I don't know people in. Bro, how I can guarantee no splatter, you know?
The last big demo I did by myself was a number of years ago. This famous movie director, it was a friend of mine, asked me to demo at his birthday party. And it was going to be on a frozen lake not too far from where we live. And it was going to be all night long. And he wanted me to bring a forge and a hammer, an anvil and stuff like that. And he wanted me to forge knives on this frozen lake. It was the craziest part was how many famous people were there. And so I was trying to figure out the logistics and how thick is the water, how thick is the, you know, because it's like, you know, all this impact going down. So they had measured how thick the ice was. And I remember, I mean, it was madness because it was just like, I'm in the middle of the deepest lake in Westchester County. And like the deepest, I mean, it's like considered one of the deepest lakes, freshwater lakes in the area. And I'm in the middle of it, and I'm forging all night long. We can't start forging until like 10 o'clock at night. And then all of a sudden, David Byrne comes over. And then all these other famous people. And then all of a sudden, I'm looking up, and there's Hugh Jackman. And Hugh Jackman says, I wanted to show. So they originally said, we want you to forge knives all the time. And I know that I'm not going to forge a knife from the beginning. No one's going to stick around for that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had like different ones all prepared. And all I had to do was heat them up and give them a couple whacks because it was fucking cold too. I mean, it was below freezing. And I had bottle openers and they were like, yeah, we're going to pay you to make bottle openers all night. And I'm like, I'm going to prep them all ahead of time. I'm fucking making people bottle openers and lying in this frozen
lake. We didn't
even
have time to do that. We said we were going to do that. Like where you just punch one and pull out a finished one.
We had, the cool part was is people want to know what we're doing. And all of a sudden I'm looking over and there's this tall guy wearing like a ski parka, like from the 80s, very colorful. And it's Hugh Jackman. And Hugh Jackman wants to know what I'm doing. He's looking and watching. And he's getting a little bit too close to the anvil. And I just kind of said, I pretended like I didn't know who he was. So I just talked to him normal and I said, would you mind just backing up a little bit? Because I don't want to melt your jacket. And then he helped showing him and then we gave him a bottle opener that I made with the Modern Forge guys. I have a picture of me and him, but I'm not allowed to post it because the director, who's a great friend and also an awesome customer, asked me not to. So I will not post it, but it was wild. But at the same time, it's like, you also kind of have to now when you have those experiences, you know the expectations of what's possible and what's not possible. Yeah. And these motherfuckers don't know anything either. It's not like they're just like, well, that really wasn't forced.
Try doing Fuck a TV you. Show. It's even worse. Producers yeah. have.
Well, I mean, that's the thing.
More exaggerated idea of what can happen.
Well, that's the thing. It's like the greatest part is you know way more than they do. And they don't know. And the crazy part about demoing, and you must know this too, Steve, is the fact that no one's going to sit there the whole time while you're forging something. It doesn't matter how long it takes. I mean, it could be.
You got 5 minutes.
You got 5 minutes. Yeah. You have to see yourself almost like if you were practicing, you're a band and you're practicing at the subway. People get on, people get off, and you can fucking do the same goddamn song. I have friends who used to practice the one song in the subways. And your people get on the subway, people get off the subway. It's always new people. No one's going to stick around because they got to make their train. And it's the same thing with demoing, blacksmithing. It's like it's never fast enough for people to really kind of sit around and watch unless they're like maniacs.
As I say, the only thing that I've seen with demoing and getting people to stick around, the only two ways I can do it is either if it's something that where it's super, super quick and, you know, it's like making a nail or something simple like that, where each heat they can see progression. If it's like, nobody wants to sit and watch you straighten a knife. Like that's just not interesting.
No.
But if you can either do something where it's super quick or you've got like lots of big sparks and like a forge weld or something like that. But that's why a lot of the time we'll do like Joe and Jimmy will actually do the forging, and I'll stand at the front and just compare it and just interact with the audience, tell them what's going on, describe what's happening with each heat, take questions and get like a bit of a back and forth going. And that works really well because people then are more engaged and they kind of have a better understanding of what's actually happening. But yeah, unless they can see what's happening, then yeah, they just lose interest so quickly.
And between heat, if you're using a regular forge, between heats, I mean, every reheat might as well be like a fucking eternity while these people are standing around watching. You need maximum juice with minimum squeeze. And it's like, it's for, especially for civilians, for lack of a better word, it's almost impossible.
I mean, the duo striking was the way to go.
They were doing.
We're just moving metal, hitting bars, man.
People love that.
With a one bar and John Saber. That was super fun.
Yeah. Now, are you either one of you? I mean, I think that some of the listeners don't really know who Conor McGregor is. Conor McGregor was an Irish fighter who was awesome I think it was Cage Steel. I think he was a fighter. He might have been like not close enough, but I mean, I think he might have gotten close to our friend Honor Kaglar in regards to their, I mean, they know the same people, you know, that UK, EU, well, the UK fighting scene is very small. And he just was incredibly charismatic. And then he came over to the United States and just won the hearts of the UFC viewer because he was brash, he was interesting, he was funny, he was quick-witted, he was an awesome fighter.
He's a character. He's a caricature. Like, he's larger than life. Like, that's his whole shtick, is the fact that he's got this massive personality that people really latch onto.
I think a lot of like the boxers and UFC people before him really were super careful to make sure that they weren't the WWF or WWE.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And Conor kind of made it show you, like, oh no, you can be a heel and we can actually still go out there and actually fight, and this can work, and this can pull in, and there's a reason why the WWE exists, and kind of broke that boundary. I'm not sure if he was the first one, but he definitely was the first, like, holy hell, what did he say kind of guy.
You can say guys like Chael Sonnen paved the way for good, great shit talker, really knew how to promote. The whole idea is you got to be able to promote the fights. And the wild thing about Conor is I think that, especially in the fighting world, he was underrated because he was so, he knew how to sell fights. He was so good at it. But he was underrated because if you look at his, you know, when he came to the United States, he was unstoppable. And I think the most pivotal fight that he ever had was when he beat Jose Aldo, which crazy. Where he got his first belt. Jose Aldo is a Brazilian champion and who fought with some of the best fighters in the UFC. And he would go five rounds. He would take huge punches. He was incredible. No one ever said, you know, he was a bullshit fighter. He was an incredible Hall of Fame fighter. And it felt like Conor, when he had the opportunity to fight him, it felt like, all right, well, this is it. I mean, maybe the road is over. And he knocked him out in like 5 or 6 seconds. And it was like the most shocking thing of all time. And I believe, I mean, I used to watch UFC religiously, and I believe that he was the total package. He was very charismatic. He was very smart. He was very shrewd, and he was an awesome, awesome fighter. I never missed a Conor McGregor fight, and I remember he elevated the UFC to, I mean, if it wasn't for Conor McGregor, the UFC would never be in the position that it's in. There's no way.
Probably right, yeah. Especially, like, I mean, when he went over to boxing, like, Floyd Mayweather didn't even know how to handle his shit talking. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Floyd Mayweather, who was
that was
flamboyant
madness.
Fucking fighter, like, just didn't even really know what to do. It was you could see him sitting there like, holy hell. Like,
this is crazy. I remember when I first started watching UFC, and it was because there was a guy named Mayhem Miller, and he had a show on MTV called Bully Beatdown, and all of a sudden you start to see these people and see this, and you know, you get fired up about it, and mm-hmm. you follow the Gracie brothers and you learn all this stuff about Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I remember when the UFC started, and I knew my friends of mine were very involved with the Gracies back in the day. Not the actual Gracies, but they would go to Gracie gyms and stuff like that. And the amazing thing was, it is so, there's something about it that is so, you know, you talk to Honor Kagler. I mean, when he was a really awesome fighter, and he's got highlight reels, it was still a kind of a gross sport, because it is like, you know, there's a cage, and these guys they have very small hands, and they have small gloves, and it just doesn't seem it seems very barbaric. What he did was he really elevated to the point where I remember getting invited to I guess it was Conor McGregor versus was a guy from Dagestan. I forgot his name. You know, I'm talking about the guy, the Russian guy. You know who I'm talking about. It's
Khabib
Nurmagomedov.
Yeah.
That fight, I remember getting invited to a big, you know, VIP party, and none of these people had ever watched a UFC fight, and none of them knew anything about who was what. And all of a sudden I'm talking to people, and then they're saying, well, what do you think, Jeff? And I'm like, I mean, it seems as though, and on Knife Talk, I did predict the chokeout, but the crazy thing is, there's just still so many people who aren't fans, and Conor made mixed martial arts such a fandom. And the most amazing part about Conor is, he was smart enough to just not blow his money. And he really, creating this concept of Forged, and I know he did the Proper 10 whiskey, and getting involved with, you know, investing his money into making things. He is a pretty extraordinary guy. And now I think he's in the new Roadhouse movie with...
I was going to say about that.
Yep.
Well,
what's amazing is like, actually last night, this is coming out Friday. On Sunday was the Super Bowl, and I was actually texting with my friend and producer and co-partner, Craig Lockwood, and he was watching and just couldn't understand it. And he couldn't understand why after every play in football, everybody would they put their hands up and they'd celebrate every little play. And he said, I couldn't understand it. And what I said to him was, well, these guys have a very short career. Like, if you're a professional football player, you got to, number one, get a degree of popularity. You have to get your stats up, but you have to be seen by the public. And you have a very, very short window where you can capitalize on this career. And I would imagine it's the same thing with mixed martial arts. And it feels as though Conor, with no real, historical experience of being in business, figured that I got to fucking make some money while I can.
Yeah. I mean, they call him the first billionaire in UFC.
Is he a billionaire?
Fighting. Yeah, that's what they say. Like, that's his nickname.
Jeez.
I mean, he definitely learned how to market. And to be honest, most of the stuff he's put his name behind is pretty darn good. Like, my wife really likes Proper 12, and I still haven't actually, on the record, probably should say this, but I haven't even had any of the beer, but Steve had some nice warm version of it.
Yeah.
But people seem to really dig it, and it's selling really well. And I mean, the way they he does nothing small. So like the way they had us come out and forge at a, you know, beer tasting event, essentially, like that's the mentality they have.
But, right.
It's just over the top, super fun. No one leaves there thinking, oh, I shouldn't have paid that $150 for the ticket. They're all like, holy hell, that was like the greatest show that I could have, minus there not being a fight in the middle of the room, which they actually are doing now. They're throwing in these like pubs, they're putting rings up and having boxing matches and stuff. Like they're going all out.
But that's what he did for his whole career. He just made everything about being a spectacle. Like it was, you didn't go because it was just another fight or just whatever. It's because it's such a spectacle. And that's what he was always really good at, is getting people invested and making people really, like, love him or hate him, people wanted to see him because they were excited about the spectacle of him and his character.
I'll tell you.
That was one of the things I was like nervous about in editing the video, because they didn't give me any feedback how they wanted it edited. I just said, hey, a 15 to 20 minute build video. And I sent them some links to like let them see some examples. And they were like, yep, looks great. So when I'm editing, I actually have filmed a lot more talking points with me and a lot more talking points with Steve, kind of telling the story. And Steve actually goes on saying how it is his first sword and, like, you know, lots of different talking points, and couldn't figure out how I was going to do it. The way I chose to actually edit the video, even now, kind of surprises me that that's the route I chose. Like, I tried to make it like a classy video that anyone would want to watch. No, not really flashy at all. There's some flashy moments. Kept the music kind of mellow. I didn't throw in a whole bunch of Irish music like everybody thought I was going to do. I just kind of like kept it like kind of classy and very minimal talking. And I let the music and the work kind of create the mood instead of telling somebody what they should feel. I just let it go. And like I had spent, during the hack and during that whole time, I was like going through so many different emotions that to me, like, it was just an emotional video for me. Right. And I don't know if it really comes out like if you watch it, but for me, it was like, okay, like I started with a Conor McGregor quote that he was quoting Van Gogh, basically, and it just painted this whole mood of, you know, I dedicated my life to this career and in the end it's ruined me, kind of thing. I still second guess whether I should have gone that route or not, but that's where I was, and it just like came out so different than their marketing, and I still to this day don't know what they're thinking about it, because no one ever told me like, yeah, we fucking love it. They were just like, yeah, when's it going up? Like, no one ever really complimented the video. They love the sword. They compliment the sword over and over, but nobody really said anything about the video. So it was like, I'm going to just, before you, just let me get this out, I'll stop talking about myself. But I am going to release a couple different videos, like one with kind of Steve and I telling the story more, like behind the scenes. And then I'm going to release a video of that first New York forging event, just because it's hilarious. Kind of a, we shot it kind of vlog style and just like, we shot a lot. Like, you shot a lot. Steve likes to overshoot a lot.
That's good.
There's a lot. I have 10 hours of footage of making that sword. So, and a lot of it was slow-mo. So I am going to put out those probably on our second channel. That works too. And, just let people that are really into it, see all the different sides of that whole experience, because it was a ride. Still is a ride.
Yeah. I would assume, based on what you were saying, that I don't know what they think of it and stuff like that, I would think that a lot of these guys are so fast-paced that I don't think they even care. As long
they're
as it doesn't...
They're already past it.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. Most of these guys are probably trying to haul ass in order to stay on board this train. Well,
they're doing more than three. Yeah. Like a handful of people, guys and girls, are doing at least three major events almost every night across the world.
Yeah.
So there's like one in Ireland, and then there'll be one in Canada, and then there'll be one in Boston. And then the next night, that whole crew that was in Boston will be in New Jersey. And then they're just doing it, and they're going crazy. So I wasn't like, you know, you put months of your time into a video project, you kind of hope to get a little more feedback than I got. But I'm not mad at him. I completely understand. Yeah. I'm just grateful for the opportunity. You want to do it again. And also, like, any creators out there, whether you're making a video or you just like to make things, be bold, man. You see something on Instagram and you want to make it, reach out to them. You never know.
You got to do what, I don't know if you guys know what Neil Kamamura is up to, but Neil Kamamura now is on I think it's a Max. HBO or Max. There's HBO a show. Max. Yeah. HBO Max. There's a show with that's made by
Momoa.
Aquaman. Yeah, Jason Momoa. And it's called On the Roam. And he did a whole episode with Neil at his shop, and they talked about their whole their connection and how it came about and stuff like that. And then there, Neil just posted this picture of him and Jason Momoa, forging at the in the same rhythm together. You've got to do whatever it takes to forge with Connor. I mean, you got to do whatever it takes.
I'm definitely going to give it a go, and I know that his. So people don't know, Connor had his lower part of his leg like basically snapped in half in the last fight.
Oh, by Dustin Poirier.
It's been like 2 years of rehab, and they just announced his fight at the first of the year that's going to take place in June, I believe.
Who's he fighting? Oh, gosh. They haven't figured it out yet.
I should probably know. No, they did. They announced it. Oh, I already forgot. Anyway, I don't want to. That's the most important thing for him in his life, that and his kids and his family. So, like, whenever it can happen, I think it will definitely happen, but I'm not pushing
He ain't coming to you. You got to go to him.
He might. I mean, he's spends a lot of time
fucking
here.
Maryland,
I'll take the Cold Iron Works Induction Forge on his yacht for all I care.
I'm telling you, you got to make it easy for him, because coming to you and Chris, and you know, he ain't going to come.
Yeah, I think the best shot of all that happening is if, either me to go to Steve and us both go over, or Steve goes over and something like
You gotta
like that.
Do whatever it takes, because he also, you know, like you said, like the videos that he's in, it's like luxury behind him.
Oh yeah.
So you need to have you need to have the Coal Ironworks induction forge, and then you're gonna have to tell his maid, hey, can you give me the special cord so I can plug this fucking thing in? And then it's gonna get annoying, and you gotta do whatever it takes, because, you know, you gotta do it.
It would be cool. I mean, like, he's, love him or hate him, he's one of the most recognizable athletes in the entire world. I think he's, like, on the list, he's, like, number 4 or 5.
Do you have a favorite fight that he's done?
Oh, man, I like a lot of them. I mean, honestly, I watch UFC not every week, but I watch it most fights I've watched. I think the back and forth, I mean, I don't know. Favorite fight.
Have you ever seen any of his fights, Steve?
I've seen a couple, but I don't watch a huge amount of it. I've got to be honest. Like, I've seen a few, but I think most of them were probably after getting this video. But I saw a couple beforehand, but again, my memory's so bad, I can't remember a favorite one or anything like that.
I mean, as far as like all of the pre-show, after show, during the whole, you know, Diaz just series of fights was super fun, I think. Those two fucking talked so much trash. It was, and I mean, like, Nick Diaz, he's like, yeah, man, I don't give a fuck. Let's go right now. I don't give a fuck. Like, every interview, I thought maybe they were just going to fight.
I would say, I used to watch religiously for years, and I used to get the pay-per-views. I had this ritual. I loved watching. I had some friends who watched. I loved watching because I felt like I was part of something. I love sports now in general, because when you're watching in the moment, you're part of something. And it was UFC 196 when it was his first fight with Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz came off the couch. He was a fill-in for someone. They sold it. Everyone was crazy. Everyone was like, I mean, Connor was on the biggest roll. He had not lost yet. And that was probably one of the greatest cards of all time. And not just because it was Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor. It was amazing because everyone was stunned that Nate won with a rear naked choke. And that was unbelievable. But the real amazing fight was that it's also the fight where Miesha Tate was fighting the preacher's daughter. Sunny, Shelly, Sandy... she was winning. She was fighting against Holly Holmes. She was fighting Holly Holmes, losing on the cards. She was going to lose if they gone to decision. All five rounds, she was behind.
Whack.
And in the last three, the last minute, she got around. She got a rear naked choke, and she choked her out and won the whole thing. It was that
was
particular card.
I remember that night.
That card was, in my opinion, my favorite, and I'm a huge Daniel Cormier fan. Like, I love Daniel Cormier till the day I die. That fight, that card, that particular card, I think was one of UFC 196, probably the best fight cards of all time. And it was, a lot of it was because of Conor and Nate, and they weren't even the final. They weren't even the.
Do you remember? I think it was the second to last fight where he fought Cerrone, and he was.
Oh yeah.
He almost like knocked him out with his shoulder. That
with
little
shoulder
shrug thing.
That's right. He learned.
I had never even heard of a shoulder shrug punch. What? It was like what the.
That was Anderson Silva. Anderson Silva had done that. Silva done that. There's a theory that he claims that was from Steven Seagal taught him that or something like that.
Okay, some bullshit, well, I just remember watching that fight like, what the hell?
That
did
was
he
a great
do?
Fight. And
yeah, it was wild.
Cowboy Cerrone's dynamite. He's another guy, very sponsor for. He was very supportive of the maker community. He makes knives with Neil Cameron as well.
Yep.
I really love what Conor has done for fighters too, because he's created an avenue for people to not just be these guys who are like locked in a cage and they're you know morons. Mm-hmm. You know, he's given this avenue for all these young guys who don't have, maybe, you know, this is their only opportunity. He's given the blueprints for this incredible success. And, you know, I like the fact that he's a very good role model in regards to athletes figuring out ways in which to capitalize on their money and also figure out ways in which they can turn it into generational wealth. I think people don't really talk about that because you hear about stories of football players who are all of a sudden who, you know, after success and they don't have any money left in their name. And you hear this stuff and you almost want to kind of transfer that over to everybody, is to just, you know, when you're hot, understand it, appreciate it, and try to figure out ways in which you can keep it.
Sure. I totally get it. I mean, I did the TV show. Same thing happened to me. I blew all that money.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, how much money did you blow? You don't have to tell me, but I mean, what did you blow it on?
A wedding.
Oh, well, that's not blowing. I mean, that's not. I mean, that's
that
like.
And traveling back and forth to the West Coast like every other week, just not caring and just buying out meals and like living the life, dating a beautiful woman and. Yep. I don't have much to show for it other than a really cool video of a really nice wedding.
If your wife's listening to this, Natasha, he didn't mean he blew it. All that stuff sounds like it's
money well spent.
Well, many nice jobs, Steve. Money well spent. Natasha, you're not listening to this part. Money well spent. It was money well spent.
Yeah, she had a nice ring, let's put it that way.
All right. Let me do the talking when it comes to, you know, don't worry about that. Steve,
man.
What are you guys up to over in the UK these days?
Because
you're back. You're no longer here in the United States. You're no longer an illegal alien. I don't think you ever were you?
No, I was mostly legal when I was there. I'm back. We're really, really busy at the moment. We're working with a couple of different YouTubers, including Mike from TA Outdoors. He's got a big YouTube channel with 2 million, 2.5 million subscribers, something like that. And we're making axes for him.
Oh, listen to that. That's a sour grape stagma right there.
We're doing that. We're making so many knives at the moment as well. I'm having to make like 200 butter knives a month and all this sort of stuff. We're going to the British Shooting Show let's say, I think next week, the week after next, and we're going along to that because Joe's working on a project where he's essentially taking old shotguns and making knives out of them, using the barrels as cladding, like the old Damascus barrels as cladding on blades, making the handles out of the stock. We're looking at ways that we can utilize like as much of the gun as possible into these knives. That's a really, really fun project. I have finally got my camera out and I've started filming again. Jimmy and I are going to be working on making some films To go up on my channel at some point. I'm in the middle of doing one for the Thornwood channel, just as a kind of introductory video to kind of say who we are and what we do. But yeah, so I'm hoping that before I'm back at Maker Camp this year, I will have a few videos up on my channel, and I'll actually be able to start kind of filming the sort of videos that I want to film and making the sort of videos that I want to make. And then hopefully, maybe when I'm over in the States this time, I can bring the camera with me and make a few more films. Ideally, I'd like to get down to Maryland and make a few more videos with Matt as well. But
isn't that a standard? Aren't you like booked now? You go to Chris Cash now all the time, and you probably have to make it up to him. He's probably like grumbling. He's like, "Yeah, you're gonna do something with Matt again. I gotta make it up to me."
I mean, I think Chris is happy for me to do a video or two with Matt, as long as it pays for the ticket for me to go over, and then I can help him move rusty bits of iron around the workshop for 6 weeks or whatever it is, because that's all we do when we're there. Bits, bro.
Last question, Steve, are you sick of the folksy expressions that Matt and Chris probably pepper you with? These folksy cliche inspirational shit.
He has more of them than we do.
No, I don't believe that for a second. I don't believe that for a second. I think that you and Chris spring out some fucking country ass bullshit. You know, like that I'm sure it's just like he's rolling his eye. By the end, I'm just like, oh my god, I can't take any more of this country ass bullshit.
There is actually a video somewhere. I was in the, I think it was like literally within the first couple of weeks, couple of days of being at the at Chris's place, and he's got like a 50 something Dodge pickup, and it's got no, like there's nothing in it. It's just the shell and the chassis, and that's it. And he was moving it by picking up the rear end with the forklift and driving it around like that. But I had to be in the front to kind of steer it and also stamp on the brakes when he stopped. And I did a quick little video saying, I wanted to say, well, I got to drive the truck or something like that. And I just accidentally said it in the most kind of like redneck way ever. Yeah, it was horrible. So yeah, unfortunately, being around those two, I end up picking up all these weird, horrible sayings and things.
You have to start when Chris Cash talks. You have to start with the word well, and then finish your sentence. So
yes, you do. And yeah. Clap. He always clap.
All right.
Yeah, he does.
All right. Okay.
All right.
So Matt, what are you up to? What's going on with you?
Oh man, I'm just trying to get back into the things. What's next? I mean, I got a video coming out this week of making like a Rondell dagger, which is pretty cool. I made that like basically when Steve was here. I finished up. That was a long time ago. I got a bunch of little videos that I'm doing, but I kind of just made a decision like a week ago not to go for MS this year at Blade Show, but I am gonna.
It's master bladesmith, not multiple sclerosis.
Yeah,
I got you.
I'm going to go for master probably next year. I just don't want to rush it. And yeah. I got a lot going on. I really need to focus on rebuilding my channel. It's still kind of gimping along. So I'm going to do the performance test, I think, here in the next month just to get that done and make a video or so out of that. But just trying to kind of really rebuild the YouTube channel, youtube.com/network. And
don't worry, I will put it in the
not,
end. Don't worry
not just
that.
That, like I said, this whole the whole hacking thing, just the life change of basically doing most of the stuff by myself now, just kind of put me in a writer's block kind of mentality for a while, and I feel like I've broken through that. I'm doing stuff. Chris and I have put a lot of time in revamping the shop. We got like screw press in there, and we got like he just. Took out his little giant that I thought he never would and put in a really cool old steam hammer inside the shop. So like we're rocking and rolling. Chris is making a bunch of hammers. I've been making a ton of chasing hammers lately. I really enjoy making tools over blades for a little while. Sometimes the blades just get much. And I've seen you just killing it, dude. Your reels lately have been really great. You're kind of like when I see you making so many knives every week, I'm like, okay, maybe I should do something. life.
Well, it's a business. I got a business. I think
you're killing it.
I'm maiming it slightly.
No, you're not.
I'm not really killing it. I'm maiming it. Everything's working out, but at the same time, for the Instagram thing for me has been like, I need maximum juice, minimum squeeze. And it's been like,
those reels are great, man.
I'm getting an anvil, boom, done. Good reel. What's so annoying about the whole thing? Number one is knife makers are fucking scum. Most of them. They're all.
How many
thieves.
People are doing that exact reel now?
Dude, the thieves are unbelievable. They go. Number one, I'm going to start a podcast, and number two, and then be like Jeff, and then number two, I'm going to steal his designs, and number three is I'm going to fucking steal his reels.
You got somebody like Charles Lienhart who did the reverse, throw the knife. That was fun.
But Charlie's got to find your own thing, dude. Jesus Christ.
If you become a meme, it's good for business.
Well, if I become a meme, this is the meme. Guys, be creative on your, you live your own life. That's the problem with a lot of knife makers in general. I'm not going to get too far into it, but it's like, you should be on your own way. You shouldn't be be creative and execute your own creativity. You're on your own journey. You're not on my journey. Leave my journey alone. But one thing I want to say is I will never leave Matt and Steve House alone. These two guys are awesome. Matt Stagmer, That Works on Instagram. Matt Stagmer on Instagram, That Works on YouTube, and That Works 2 on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Steve House, Moonshine Metalwork on Instagram. And what's your YouTube channel?
That's it.
Moonshine Metalwork. All right, yeah. Moonshine Metalworks on YouTube. And I'm gonna tag, if you guys want to see wherever you listen, in the show notes will be all the links, all hyperlinks to Matt's stuff, to Steve's stuff. And I really appreciate the both of you coming over here. I love this story. I knew it was going to be good. Steve, I did not beat your brakes in like Jesse wanted me to.
I'm so impressed.
I cannot do that to my friend Steve.
Go watch Steve make his first sword.
I
really just filmed him do it. There's some like camera tricks where it looked like I'm doing some of the work, but it was really all Steve.
All right. Yeah. Guys, you did a great job. We did it, guys. I got a heart out, but I'm sorry. I really appreciate you both being here.
We'll do it again.
Steve, you're the man. Matt, you're the man. Everybody, thank you very much for listening. Thank you for your support. I thank my sponsors. And once again, I need your blacksmithing questions. If you're listening to this, go to Knife Full Blast Podcast on Instagram and DM your blacksmithing questions for Pat Quinn to answer your questions. Matt Stagmer, Steve House, guys, thank you once again.
Thanks, man.
Pleasure.
Pleasure was mine.